Thanks for staying on with us. As promised, this is a live show. We are bringing wall-to-wall coverage in terms of the presidential inauguration that will take place just a few hours from now. At Astro Avenue, we're going to be having a host of analysts joining in the conversation. And of course, for this show right now, we have Jamil Ahmad dialing in from London. Jamil, let's talk a little bit more about the situation that the United States have to present its case towards the rest of the world. Now, we know that over the past 4 years, bilateral ties between US and Malaysia has deteriorated. Maybe not deteriorated, I would say a non-starter over the past 4 years. But this has got to improve if we were to, you know, ensure that both economies continue to grow. Let's do a macro outlook or update in terms of where the US is right now and how do we contextualize that to the Southeast Asian economies.
Sure. So if I could sum up the presidency and what it's meant for relations over on a global scale over the past 4 years, it's inconsistent. Because things have always changed day by day and by some accounts to social media feeds. So I think the market is overall looking for more consistency and a more outlook of collaboration and unity. And I think this is why there's big hopes over Biden that he's going to be able to provide that message. But when we talk about a macro outlook, we cannot understate the severe challenges that Biden is going to inherit. Not only is he inheriting a pandemic crisis, which is something that we haven't seen in our lifetimes, you've got economic shocks, and you've got the most divided America that I think all of us have also seen in our lifetimes. We've never understood scenes like this before. But nonetheless, this is the challenge that he's taken on. It's going to be a big challenge. Macroeconomically, the United States is still a huge contributor to global GDP. It's somewhere, you know, it's more significant to China. And China's already accounts for 16 and 70% of global GDP contribution anyway. But in the United States, this pandemic has been astonishing decline, and unfortunately the things are getting worse before they get better. For example, last week we saw initial jobless claims on a weekly basis. So just to provide your viewers some insight, this means that it's the amount of unemployed benefits that were filed on a week climbed to 1 million. That was the closest the highest numbers that we saw since March 2020, which again was the start of the pandemic. And last month the United States even contracted jobs, which was the negative job growth for the first time in a month since about 6 months ago, which shows the element of the challenges the United States economy faces. Hopefully the vaccines do improve things. We all hope that that's going to be the case, but we cannot stress enough on a macro level, global economy is still in a very precarious and fragile condition, which is why the course from analysts and officials too, it's always for more medicines to be provided to the economy, whether that's through lower interest rates or more government and fiscal stimulus packages, because the economies need as much help as they can get, even if it's just from a sentiment and a confidence level.
The Treasury Secretary nominee, Janet Yellen, is a well-known face, not just in the US, but around the world. Do you believe that by being appointed as the Treasury Secretary, she can actually execute the kind of decisions that we are talking right now?
She can. It's not necessarily her job, actually, to be doing this, but it's a good thing that she has the background from a central bank. She has a background from an economist. She also has a background now, including from a political point of view as well. You know, we first started talking, Ibrahim, about 5 to 6 years ago, and that was when Janet Yellen was the head and the person in charge of the Federal Reserve, which is the U.S. Central Bank.
But yes.
Yes, so that was her position back then. And what we saw from Janet Yellen then was a narrative on the need for lower interest rates, the narrative that economies need a lot of help globally. We need to provide more help to also improve equalities and to improve the standards of living on a world level too. And I think we're going to see the exact same narrative from Janet Yellen as the Treasury Secretary, where she's going to continue to push for more help, more support. Definitely, she can help improve and complement the situation because she can work hand in hand from the central bank. I'm not saying they're going to be independent. I'm not going to say they're going to be reliant on the political system. Of course, they're going to remain independent, but at least there can be a close collaboration which can help economies through this crisis.
Yeah, and of course, the legacy that she has to live up to is, of course, Steven Mnuchin. Do you think that Mnuchin, and I did talk to you about this, the fact that he is one of the original faces of the Trump cabinet, remains a mystery into how he continued to be hired throughout the entire Trump presidency is also quite a mystery for me. But do you believe that it's important for us to look at Mnuchin's work for the past 4 years before we can actually talk about what needs to be done in the next 4 years to come?
I think a lot of what Mnuchin's work has been is to try to... Trump decided what he was going to do. He always decided whether he was going to have relations with this country or what kind of, what kind of impacts Trump's policies were going to have on the economy. And that was also always Mnuchin's job, to basically be the chicken and egg scenario, where he was also always chasing the measures. But I cannot say, actually, from a neutral stance, I cannot say Mnuchin did not do a decent job. In fact, at times, he helped the U.S. economy and a global economy through some very difficult situations, such as the U.S. and China trade war. I'm not trying to praise him, but I'm saying from a neutral level, he did not really have the abilities to run the Treasury Secretary or to run his divisions in the way that perhaps Yellen's going to have. Yellen's going to have some freedom. She's going to have autonomy. She's going to have the ability to advise her fellows on what we can do to improve the situations. Where with Mnuchin, it was always about trying to repair fences. And he didn't really have the autonomy to provide that kind of freedom that Yellen would do. And Yellen, because of that and because of her abilities, she's going to be seen as a good change, regardless of any policies that do get actually introduced.
Yeah, this is also emblematic of Trump's presidency. He doesn't allow his cabinet secretaries or cabinet ministers to actually execute their own portfolio. But before we jump to the next question, as you can see on the screen right now, here is the live feed coming in from Washington, D.C. As promised, Astro Awani will be bringing in live coverage from now until a few hours after the inauguration. So do stick with us when we cover that live coverage all the way from Washington, D.C. Back to this conversation, Jamil, let's focus a little bit more on the legacy of Trump versus the necessity that needs to be done by Biden when it comes to foreign policy affairs in Southeast Asia. Now, there's a lot of preface here. Neither you or me are foreign policy commentators, but we have to talk about it from the standpoint of business, from economy. Do you see any changes in the near term, at least for the first 100 years? What do you for the first 100 days? Let's talk into what kind of expectations you see would come out from the White House in the next 2 to 3 months from now.
I believe that's going to be executive orders, fast and furious. A few different things I expect to see. The rejoining of the World Health Organization, that's going to be a big one. The climate change, that's going to be another big one. He's going to move fast on those ones. And essentially what Biden's first actions would be, and this will go on the narrative today on the need for global unity and collaboration, it will be to show that the United States is returning to globalization. I think that's been the big thing over the past 4 years. If we could say that there's been that one ingredient that's been constant, it's been that the U.S. has been slowly, slowly, slowly changing its back away from globalization. And Biden's going to be here to say, look, we're here to work with you all again. We're here to return the U.S. to what it was seen as just a couple of years ago. And that's essentially what I expect to see, not just in this speech today, but over the first couple of weeks. So that's going to provide a lot of help anyway, because global unity means that global economies are going to work together. This means that global trade will resume. Of course, it has pandemic obstacles at the moment. And I think that's going to be great for the Southeast Asian economies anyway. And that's why a lot of investors are still very much bullish, which means they're upbeat and positive on emerging markets, whether it's the currencies or the stock market indexes. And that's seen as one of the shining lights of an investor portfolio this year, to remain upbeat on emerging markets. And what we also expect to see is a lot more of not just foreign policy, but to improve ties, bilateral ties. I'm not saying that the US and China are going to solve all issues overnight, because there's been a legacy impact from Trump. But nonetheless, it's to see that we're going to try and improve relations and work through issues rather than this beating of the chest metaphor that we've seen. And that's led to a lot of defiance from either side.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about developed markets. You've touched a bit on emerging markets. Of course, the situation in Europe is slightly better than in the United States, but UK is in deep trouble in terms of their national health systems. Everything is being tested to its limits. In fact, one could argue that the NHS is broken for the time being. What's the situation there when it comes to this new presidency in the US and how the foreign relations are going to take place between EU, between the UK, with the United States? What's the story when it comes to developed markets?
The United Kingdom is not in a good place right now economically. Even through the first pandemic, to give you a few snapshots, it was the worst hit advanced economy from the pandemic. And that's only hit even further as the economies have gone through a different cycle of lockdowns. But even from the crisis of a health point of view, UK over the past week or so has seen death rates way above 1,000 people per day on average. And the NHS, which is the National Health Service, it is what commentators have said, it's been overwhelmed, it's overstretched. And the infections are somewhere like 50,000 plus per day new infection cases, which is obviously not good situation, which is why this lockdown that we're in the UK right now, in national lockdown since just before Christmas, we are expecting them to remain in place until the end of the quarter. From an economic standpoint, point of view as well, another obstacle that people are trying to get their heads around is Brexit, because the Brexit trade deal was signed just before the New Year deadline. And that's brought a lot of it's interesting perspectives for the longer term, because the UK now has autonomy to be negotiating its own trade deals outside of control of the European Union. But at the same point, there's a lot for people to get used to, because this is the new normal. And unfortunately, we are being hit from lots of different sides in the UK.
Let's talk a little bit more about currency then. What's the situation like for the US dollar versus major currencies, and including that of the ringgit?
So the US dollar concluded 2020 on a negative footing. We saw a decline of somewhere like 6-7% in the dollar index for the second half of last year. We also have to take into account that the early stages of 2021 have seen a bounce higher in the US dollar that's caused a lot of surprise in the markets. But we have to be very mild in our expectations here. This is probably just a short-term correction, a short-term bounce. And there's one thing that analysts and commentators have been very consistent on in 2021, is the confidence. And we use that word very lightly, because there's something we always say in markets, we shouldn't be too confident because the surprise can always occur. But the market is very much short on the greenback and the US dollar. They're seen as the perfect storm of situations for the US dollar to continue its weakness in 2021 through Yellen becoming the Treasury Secretary, her very open stance towards more easing of policies. Federal Reserve are very, very dark in terms of their narrative right now. They're in a, you know, lower interest rates are here to stay for years. You've got a president that's having to spend more and more money, the incoming president, to help the US economic situation, which does mean that a weaker dollar because stronger stock market sentiment. So we do expect the US dollar to continue to weaken into 2021. At the moment, the dollar index is somewhere around 90. We do think it can go towards 85 at some point of this year, which would mean additional 5% or so weakness in the greenback. And that's why when you look at the opportunities right now in currency markets, euro strengthened significantly last year. So did the British pound too. But what we haven't seen those strengths is in the emerging markets. So we look at currencies like the South African rand, Turkish lira, Russian ruble, they remain very much oversold. But talking to your basket in the Southeast Asia region too, we see a lot of prospects for the Indonesian rupiah. Chinese yuan has already strengthened significantly this year. But we do believe that the Malaysian ringgit, which is trading somewhere around US dollar MYR, somewhere around 4 at the moment, we do think that over the course of 2021, we can gradually decline towards 380, if not a bit lower. That will not be a tomorrow move, but we do think we can gradually go down towards that level. And that may mean the strongest Malaysian ringgit on headline for about 4 or 5 years.
Let's talk a little bit more about China then. I would argue that China had a free pass for the past 4 years to embolden their behavior in this part of the world. We are seeing encroachment of their political entities. We're seeing encroachment of their literal physical entities across the Spratly Islands, across South China Sea. And this is in tandem with their economic policies as well. We've seen how they have strong-armed some of the economies in Southeast Asia, as well as other economies around the world, in Africa even. Do you believe that their behavior is going to change, or they're going to modulate their behavior a little bit better now that we are seeing grown-ups entering the White House again?
China was the biggest victim from the Trump presidency. But at the same point, it was also the biggest winner from the Trump presidency, because China managed to grasp even stronger influence on global economic affairs, global relations. As the US was turning away from globalization, China was very much turning towards globalization. I don't think that influence is going to change significantly, but we will probably see a bit more of a moderation, because US and China economic and relation ties should improve drastically under a Biden presidency, just because he's more diplomatic in his tone and stance. But you are correct that China's investments in the One Belt, One Road means that China now has a lot of influence over affairs in places like Africa, completely different territories geographically, but also because the China economy, if we go back to the pandemic, China was the only major economy in 2020 to actually grow last year. Amazing, right? And because of this, and the economy is going through the same problems in 2021, this means that the China economy will also benefit in 2021 as well, because other economies are facing additional recessions. And because of this, China's power and influence on the global markets and global relations too will also strengthen.
Fantastic. Any final thoughts before we move straight to Washington, D.C. to watch the inauguration?
That we should all be more positive. I know that there's a lot of challenges right now. We're all going through difficult turmoil because of the lockdowns returning and because things are getting very much fatigued. But at the same point, we have to stay strong and support the health officials, because we have to hold hope as well that the more help they have again, the vaccines rolled out, the quicker we get out of this situation. So it's kind of like, that's the tug of war we're in right now. We have to remain quiet. We have to remain very patient. And hopefully the tug of war will come towards our side over the next couple of months.
Fantastic. That was Jamil Ahmad, Director of Investment Strategy at NAGA, calling in from London. Before we continue on with our forward programs that are coming after this show, be sure to continue to stick with us at Astrawani as we cover live the Biden inauguration that is coming in from Washington, D.C. But for now, we'll take a short break before we continue with our continuous engagement at the news bulletins that is coming right after this.